Yo guys, how's it going? It's Tuesday, January 22nd, 2013, and welcome to the sixth episode of Social Echoes, the True Voice Media Podcast. If you're ready to go, let's get rolling. Hello, hello. Thanks for tuning into Social Echoes. My name is John Steyert, the host of Social Echoes, the True Voice Media Podcast. Today, we are joined by the lovely Lynette Young. And we're going to bring Lynette in just a second. But very quickly, there were two esteemed social media thought leaders that posted about visual marketing this week. CC Chapman, our last guest, and thank you very much to CC. He was awesome on Social Echoes. He posted about the photography and marketing mix. And Jay Bear, who will be a Social Echoes guest later on in 2013, he also posted about the importance of graphics and visuals in your social media marketing mix. Basically, you know, visuals are such an important part of any kind of learning, right? Scientists maintain, and I think the majority of us would agree, that about 75% of our learning comes through visuals. It's just the way that our brain is wired. So this isn't so much a, you know, like some kind of awe-inspiring new piece of data information. This is just kind of a good reminder from two very well established guys in the social media and marketing realms, just to kind of say, listen, we need to kind of incorporate more visuals every time we post, every time we put up a status update, because those are the things that people will latch onto, because they can get a ton of information from a simple visual. You know, the cliche of pictures worth a thousand words. It's a cliche for a reason, and it works. So it's I'm just as guilty as anybody else. I think I do an okay job with it with the Project180.me blog. And if you're looking for any of that stuff off of the blog, just use hashtag Project180. Because I think it's a lot easier to just kind of post a visual than it is to write a 300 to 500 word blog post. Again, it's different times, different contexts, but if it's something that's a difficult piece in your industry to kind of describe, or if it's an event that's really visual, definitely include the visuals. So with that said, let's invite our guest into the fold. She is the founder of Purple Stripe Productions, a Google Plus powerhouse, host of Media Chit Chat, the author of the book Google Plus for Small Business, lover of Doctor Who and all things purple, Lynette Young. Hi, Lynette. How are you doing?
Hi. You know, in fact, I was scrambling right before the show to go in and order a Doctor Who shirt that I saw pop up online. So I had to go get it in there.
That's good. I am a huge BBC fan. I can't say that I am a Doctor Who fan per se, but I am an avid watcher of Top Gear, and I plan on writing a pretty fun post on the content marketing mix of Top Gear, one of my favorite shows on TV.
I'm going to have to check it out.
Worth watching, even if you're not a car head. So, Lynette, your forte and your passion online seems to be Google Plus. But here's the question. Why is Google Plus a ghost town? Obviously, you and I are here talking on Hangouts. But the perception seems to be that no one is here. So if there's a party going on and no one's going, why would I want to go to that party?
A couple things. Actually, I was going to say, I kind of get pegged as this Google Plus fangirl, which I've, you know, self-identified as. But for me, it's digital communications, digital media. I just happen to think that Google Plus has a really strong tool set, and the features and the benefits that you get out of the system are huge. And for the amount of time and effort and money that I see people putting into things like Facebook or Pinterest or even Twitter still at this point, there are new things that can get you where you want to go a lot faster, and I definitely think that that's Google Plus. The whole ghost town of Google Plus thing always cracks me up, because I inevitably will go out and speak, and I'll hear, Google Plus is horrible. I went there, and I posted a whole bunch of my content, and then no one responded, so I left. Like, that's basically what it comes down to. Because I'm sitting there while they're talking to me, checking on my phone. I'm like, what's your account? Let me look. And they put three pieces of content out there that aren't even public facing. Because in Google Plus, if you post something public, that means the search engines can find it. If you post it anywhere else, it's that walled garden, just like Facebook. And that's not going to get you any extra traction. So I kind of look at it that way. But the thing about Google Plus is you actually have to put your kind of your actions where your mouth is. You have to really do social media 101. You have to go out there and friend people and start conversations and share information and comment before you can expect that in reciprocation, which is a really tough pill for a lot of people to swallow. They're like, I've been on Facebook for 3 years or 5 years and I've had pages and I have all these fans. I'm so popular. My business is so great. And they come over here and they have to start from zero. Everybody starts at zero and they hate that. But it has to be done. And I go over some of it in my book, Google Plus for Small Businesses. It's out on Kindle digital formats now, but I think the end of March we're killing trees for it. I forget the exact date that it's coming out. But it's supposed to be a primer for entrepreneurs, small businesses, solopreneurs, that sort of thing, brick and mortars, consultants, it doesn't matter, for someone just looking to get started in it. I don't make a super huge deep dive on all the techie, geeky stuff of why Google Plus is better, but mainly what I start out with people, and I'm like, you need to be in Google Plus, number one, for the tools. The tools are awesome, right? So like we have this whole ability now to do our own broadcast, 10-person hangout on air, goes right to YouTube. It's amazing. The whole idea of circles and sharing pictures, and it's kind of all being integrated to the 60-plus products that Google already has as a company, not just a search engine. But the thing about Google Plus is nobody loves Google Plus like Google, right? So the more content you put in there, the more interactions you make with other people, meaning you have to get off your butt and do it yourself. You have to reach out. People are not going to flock to you. It's not the field of dreams. Then you kind of get rewarded for that building your social graph, which is another thing that's big in Facebook coming around. They're finally going to use it to what it's supposed to be used for. But if you start doing that in Google Plus and making the connections and circling people and having them circle you back and putting out relevant content, the search engines are going to pop you to the top. And something called Search Plus Your World, which is this concept that the information plus the people equal the knowledge. That's kind of how I talk about it. That it's going to be huge, and you just can't get that type of exposure out of Facebook. You can't. You could put all your eggs in the basket of Facebook and do as much as you want, but if people don't know you're already there, they're never going to find you there. Of course, the whole new search that they have out is a whole other story, but it spills over. Everything you do in Google Plus spills over into the 60 plus products that they have out there already. And as far as I'm concerned, I want, when people search for things that I do for a living or things that my clients do for a living, or I want to find something that's out there hobby-based or professional or whatever, I go to Google and I search it in. And the more information you put in Google Plus, the better chances you have to be getting found. So that's pretty much my 6.5 minute view across all of the platforms that Google has in general. And it's not so much inside the walled garden that a Facebook would be.
It's an excellent 6.5 minute answer. If
was
that's
it
what
6.5 minutes?
I don't know. I doubt it. But we could probably end the show right there. That's all the time we have on Social Echo. No. But,
sorry.
No, that was a fantastic answer, truly. And I think that a lot of the stuff that you touched upon is a lot of the stuff that I wanted to ask you, certainly. So to kind of really just recap a little bit, I think a lot of the stuff, when people kind of talk about how none of their friends are on Facebook or whatever, or all their friends are on Facebook and nobody is on Google Plus. I think that a lot of it has to do with the expectations. When people first were opened up to Facebook, I first joined Facebook as a graduating senior in high school in 2006. So I remember a buddy of mine telling me about this Facebook thing because he had older siblings, they were in college, and he said, as soon as you get that .edu account, you're able to get into that walled garden. And then evolved, and more people were able to come in a couple years later, and it just became this thing where like, oh, Facebook, I'm just going to try it. Why not? And then the expectations that Facebook then kind of set for everything else kind of has limited a little bit of what Google Plus has kind of like brought to the table. Like they're totally new to this. Google's thing is search and AdWords, and they make money because they're an advertising company. And you know, they are learning social on the fly, basically. And it's something that people are kind of not giving them the immediate credit for. And again, we're going to talk about the rich benefits of the search aspect of Google Plus later on in the show. But the fact that you touched upon that was, I think, very good. So to kind of backtrack again, it's not a ghost town for everybody. You and I are on here. I think it's a very valuable tool. It's one of the reasons why we use it for the podcasting, because it goes from Google Plus Hangouts to the YouTube. People are able to watch live if they are. Thank you very much, and hello to you. And then we're able to extract the audio and put it up in iTunes and other different parts of the web. But yeah, I think the interesting thing, when you kind of look at the demographics of Google+, it's that men are 2/3 of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of almost like the Pinterest, but what Pinterest is for women, Google+ seems to be for men. What do you think the opportunity for women on Google+ is?
Well, actually, when I have to give you a hopefully a small backstory. When I first joined Google+, it was literally within the 4 hours that it had become open to people outside of Google themselves. A friend of mine lives in California. Her husband's an engineer, some way, shape, or form related to the project or not, sent me an invite. So I'm on the East Coast, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was like, forget this. I'll join, grab my name, right? Because I have to squat my name everywhere because I didn't even know. And I'll deal with it the next morning. And by the end of that week, it was, quite frankly, the sausage fest. Because most of the engineers were men. So the theory is that they invited most of their friends, which were probably men, and it kind of weighted it disproportionately in the beginning. And I would get things like, well, you know, technology's hard. I would have questions because the first thing you want to do with a new piece of software is like you want to bang on all the buttons to figure out what everything does.
Of course.
And I, like, people would like pat me on the head, like people, men that I didn't even know, whatever. They're like, well, you know, it's a little hard for girls, technology. So I lost my mind. And then I started this idea, this movement, this community called Women of Google Plus, just to kind of find and showcase the smart, intelligent women in any genre of business or hobby or whatever that were comfortable using a digital communications platform. So that's kind of gone out from there. But we haven't been able to shake that 30% women thing. And it's part of it, I think it's the media perpetuates it. So I'll talk to women in my real life and they'll go, yeah, I heard about that, but I heard it's scary and that the men are mean and there's trolling. And I'm like, have you not been on the internet?
Like, yeah. Well, men, welcome.
You get
welcome
trolled
to
anyway. Welcome to the internet.
Like, welcome to the Thunderdome.
Exactly. And I'm like, yeah, but for average people that aren't used to, say, internet culture, that type of thing, they get very shocked when they'll put something out on a public forum, like say a Google Plus, and they have men that they don't know contact them, write, say hello. It's not in their language. They're not from their country. That's not how people operate in Facebook. I have my daughter is in Girl Scouts and in sixth grade. So one of the moms in my town, like literally your daughter slept over to my house, and it took her like 4 years to friend me on Facebook. And I was like, kind of asked her, I'm like, well, why did it take you so long to friend me on Facebook? She goes, because I know you now. Like, that was a level of comfort that she needed. Like, her kid was at my house overnight. Like, that's huge trust. Not even enough trust to friend me on Facebook. Like, that was kind of where I see a lot of average non-internet junkie people. That has to be their level of comfort. So when you come over to Google Plus, where it's kind of a big free-for-all, it's scary for a lot of people, women especially, online. So I think that there's a lot of things that they've put into place that the idea of like blocking and reporting and all that business, it's on all the social platforms. You can get it anywhere, but they seem to be very proactive with it, but it still kind of has a bad stigma to it. So we're getting out of it, but it's just a matter of what people's communication styles are kind of used to. When you talk on Google Plus, you get a global community, a global audience instantly. And that doesn't really happen anywhere else, except for maybe not even Reddit or any place like those, because those tends to be very centric to whatever industry or whatever you're talking about. When you talk on Google Plus, it's everywhere, in, you know, potentially everywhere at the same time, which as a business is perfect, right? But on a professional or on a personal level, it's a little bit more difficult, I think, for some people to jump in and unlearn what they knew or what they were comfortable with in Facebook or Twitter to kind of relearn this. But for better or for worse, this is where digital communications is going. In 10 years, it's not going to be Google Plus. It's not going to be Twitter. It's not going to be Facebook. It's going to be something else. So people have to catch up. Small businesses are the most nimble out of all of them, but they're like, listen, I just got Facebook. I'm good. Like, I'll try that in a couple of years. That's literally what I get from people. So that's fine, because those that are willing to kind of put their flag in the ground a little early reap the rewards, in my opinion. So
I think that's true with a lot of different things. And a lot of it has to do with, I think, just as we get older, we get more comfortable with, you know, I'm 25. So
I'm not.
You're 26.
Yes.
Right? The biggest thing for me is that, like, I always think about, like, you know, how will I kind of accept the newest, latest piece of technology? And probably won't even be like on a computer that we're looking at right now. It'll be on something that's way more, you know, when you see something like Samsung come out with like that foldable screen and the different things they're displaying at CES, it's mind-boggling what people are doing. Like, we understand the user interface of everything and how businesses can use it, but you have the tech guys that are just bunkered down in their basements from the day that they're 7 years old and younger, learning these different pieces of hardware. And I really am curious to see how my generation kind of reacts to just the evolving of technologies and the different ways that social evolves. Because truly, if we're expecting even the things that are apparent today, at the beginning of 2013, we know that by the end of this year, it'll be completely different. And everybody that has written books about different things will be like, God, I wish I had waited 2 or 3 months to wait. It's not to discredit your book at all, because I think what is in your book is very valuable to very many businesses. It's just the fact that it just changes so quickly.
Well, that's the challenge also with writing tech. I didn't want to write a cookbook per se, like this is how you do this and this is the menu item, because that outdated. I mean, like, I'd be typing it and it's outdated kind of thing.
That was the thing that CC Chapman was saying last week. He was just saying that, you know, as much he didn't want to write another tech book. He said, I did that with Content Rules and that still has a lot of value today. But he said, I didn't want to write another tech book. So he wrote Amazing Things Will Happen. It's what he wanted to do. It's a passion project of his. It's something that can last for a long time, as opposed to somebody wanted to write about how Hootsuite today is a good thing for the next 5 years. Because Hootsuite will change.
Tough. It's tough. Even with the book Google Plus for Small Businesses, I was more adamant about writing business practices, digital business practices, think about how you create your content. Think about how you can repurpose things. Think about not just getting a like or a plus one. Think about how you're going to convert off the screen. How are people going to, like, you? It's not a business strategy or a goal in social media, or I work much bigger than I kind of look at digital communications, not just necessarily the social aspects of it.
Right.
But it's like, oh, I got a plus one. I have 1,000 new fans on my Facebook page. I'm like, yeah, do you see it in your bank account? Or people walking in your front door? That to me is where people are supposed to be looking. So I tried to sneak that in a little on my book, but these are the things that I think people need to be looking at. And those ideas, I think, stand a little longer. Those are a little bit more evergreen than, you know, this is the menu item for this. Because as soon as I wrote about, I had to put in Hangouts. And when I started the book, not everybody had Hangout on air broadcastability. I did. And because I'm a crazy person on Google Plus, and they gave it to me first so I could break it, you know. And but by the end of when the book was getting published, they had already changed a bunch of things, and it was like, it is what it is. I'd rather go on the business concepts of using the tools and the ideas that you can generate from using the medium of Google Plus rather than this is how many characters you can type in a message. I mean, that part's, the mechanics of it are almost ridiculous. So I sympathize with CC. I loved both his books. And it's hard to write for tech nowadays because it moves too fast. So.
Yeah. So many moons ago, many social moons ago, Google made it very clear that they weren't going to index content from what they deemed closed social sites like Facebook. And this is something you kind of touched on earlier in your first answer. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it certainly for their own layer on Google Plus, which of course they should. If that were the only piece of like benefit, if that was the only benefit from people being on Google Plus, is they got added more robust search results, would that be enough for businesses to take a shining to the network?
I think so. I have this concept that I kind of talk about Google as a search engine, right? So like in any search engine, we'll talk about Bing or Yahoo, whatever. As a search engine, like there's data that goes into the search, right? The content that exists on the internet. And I'm in no way, shape, or form a social SEO expert. But from the outside, this is kind of how I see it, that the information's on the internet, the search engines index it, and then they run, you know, Blackmagic stuff on the back end, you know, their algorithms to figure out the most relevant content to you when you search for it, right? But all search engines are really ever doing is dishing out information that meets your criteria, right? I need a gas station within 10 miles of my zip code or whatever, some place to get my tire fixed or what have you, a restaurant. It's going to give you factual information. Now, of course, with the advent of blogging and things like this, there's not so much just data on the internet. There's a lot of opinion on the internet, blogging, articles, all that kind of thing. So you're going to get a mix of that as well, too. But the piece that all the search engines, in my opinion, were missing was the human element. You can't automate intelligence. You just can't. That knowledge that human beings bring by saying, I like this over that, or I'm connected to this person, so their opinion probably means a little bit more to me than some random stranger in a different country. So I think that that's the biggest motivator for using Google Plus, especially as any kind of entity. I don't care if you're a business, a person, a hobby, or whatever. If you want to get found and grow your audience and find more people that are interested in what you have to talk about, you need to get in there in Google Plus, because yes, Google Plus loves, you know, Google loves Google Plus more, but
Google
this whole
Google.
Google loves them Google. but the idea of this search plus your world, which is where they're taking information that's in the search engines, the people, your social graph, the opinions, things that you talk about online, and they convert that into knowledge. Because when I search online, I not only just want to find a restaurant within 15 miles of me that serves sushi, I want people's opinions on it. I want six people walked out of there with food poisoning, I'm out. I just don't want the name and the address and the phone number kind of thing. Like, you want more relevant information that can only come from people. And I think that that's where the whole search engine thing is going with Google specifically, because this is where I see them going. So even if a business was only, if the only perk was more relevancy in the search engines, I think that it's worth it. But I happen to think that the tools that they give us in here are pretty killer too. Of course, Hangouts and Hangouts on Air being probably the most prominent.
Kind of touching on what you said with the indexed, the real kind of knowledge data that now Facebook's kind of going after, where they just opened up Facebook Graph Search. So you have Facebook Graph Search versus Google Search. Last week, towards the tail end of last week, Jeff Gibbard, the president of True Voice Media, wrote a blog post on social media philanthropy called Facebook isn't in competition with Google Plus. Facebook is in competition with Google. And it's true, especially when you see this new thing being opened up. So basically, they're now, it started out with Facebook and social, Google and search, and then Google made the first move into social, and now Facebook's making that move into search. So obviously, Facebook's attempt is to gain more ad dollars so they can get and to get more information from their users. So what does Facebook stand to gain? What do they stand to lose? What does Google stand to gain, lose? And how do you think this kind of all turns out in the next 6 months or so?
I don't know if Facebook's going to get it together completely in 6 months, but I wish they would, honestly. When I saw, there's a new announcement coming from Facebook, and I was like, they're probably going to tell us, like, our profile picture could be bigger, or, like, something stupid. I was totally expecting something like that. Coming out of CES, you know, they're not, I figured, all right, they have to grab some PR back or whatever.
Right.
But when I heard that they were doing this, the graph search, I was like, okay, game on. Here we go. Now you guys woke up. Like, let's go. But the thing is like, you kind of go for, and Guy Kawasaki has said this, and I always say this and give him credit for it. People have traditionally gone to Facebook to connect with people or things that they already know, or they've been exposed to externally. I add upon about what Guy says. I'll go to a store and they'll say, like us on Facebook. I'll go, oh, okay, duh, you're on Facebook. I'll go, if I remember to go home and go to Facebook, I'll do it. Google as a search engine, and even now as a social layer, that's for the finding things you don't know already, right? Because as a person, I want to be exposed and I want to find new people for my audience, new people that I could learn from or get business from or do business with. That's kind of the thing. I don't go to Facebook and search for people that might want to hire me. It just doesn't traditionally work that way. They don't go into Facebook and search for a pizzeria near them, but now they can, which is the huge thing. because people is Facebook and things is Google, and now they're bringing both of those into Facebook, which I think is going to be huge. I have a little bit, it's probably very conspiracy theory type thing, so I'll say this publicly. I'm not sure I could actually find the originators of all the articles, but over the years, I've definitely read some pieces of information, probably conspiracy theory type things, about Facebook in general, and like, for example, why EdgeRank exists. And it's not so much to give you the best information in Facebook or to just give you very relevant things. A lot of really hardcore big data people have suggested that the infrastructure, the back-end data infrastructure of Facebook is very weak, and that they actually can't physically handle serving you all the results. So they have to say, here's 17% of it, because their servers just can't handle it. It was never built like that. I mean, I watched the movie, and if it's true for what it's true, he wrote this stuff in a college dorm room kind of thing, and not with the mindset of having to manage big data. And that's what Google is very good at. Google's very good at managing and dealing with big data. So when I search for something in Google Plus or in Google, I'm going to get relevant information, but I'm also going to get pages and pages and pages of information. I'm probably not going to go to page 17, but at least it's there. I don't get that in Facebook. I don't necessarily know if I'm going to trust the data that the graph search will give me back. If I say I want to look for friends that are also fans of Doctor Who, if there's 400 of them, I'm guessing I'm going to get maybe 20 answers back, and I don't know if Facebook is going to give me those 20 results based on what's best for me or what's best for them, those people, those pages, having spent ads, that kind of thing. So the data return always seems very tainted to me. And I'm really wondering, honestly, if when this gets turned on for the billion people that use Facebook, if the systems themselves will be able to handle the tremendous load that doing queries like this will handle in the system. So it's a little bit conspiracy theory type thing, but I mean, I look at that and I'm like, you know, when you first started this, you weren't dealing with the amount of data or the requests or anything that you have to deal with now. And throwing extra server farms on it doesn't fix this. But so I'm a little nervous. I think the idea is past due. I think they should have done this a little earlier, but maybe they're, you know, just kind of getting it ready in the back end. But people live in Facebook. People visit Google Plus, you know, like the Google, Facebook is kind of a tab open on their desktop during the day, where Google Plus, they get a message or they do something and they kind of go there and visit. So the longer they could keep their eyeballs on it and the more information they can get out, the better I think it is. So I think it's overdue for them. And I just really hope that it implements well.
If it's a conspiracy, it's a fascinating one. We will get Alex, we will get Alex Jones on the case.
Yes. Yes.
One of the things that you just mentioned in the answer, you said can versus will. I think that was very interesting, because can people do this? Yes. But yeah, will they is obviously the biggest question. And so if I'm looking at it like from a personal standpoint, which is I only have my perspective, I don't know if I will. I'm, you know, maybe that's an example of what I was talking about earlier, kind of like I'm already set in my ways. Like, you know, I just want to search in Google because that's what I know, and that's what I know is going to give me the best information. So maybe it's going to take somebody, one of my friends, a colleague, a peer, to say, look, I got this from Facebook as opposed to this is what you got from Google. What I got, I think, is better. And I may look at it and be like, oh, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the biggest test. It's going to be the you know, the sniff test, whether it gets by. And obviously we're going to have to wait and see until it's, you know, rolled out for everybody. And I think obviously people just because people love to complain, they'll be like, oh, this is horrible, this is stupid. And we have to kind of get by that in the first few weeks and then really kind of say, like, okay, once the dust has settled, what's the final verdict? What are we feeling about this? What are businesses getting from this that is going to actually be viable for them? Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. You had made mention before about how, you know, kind of get set in your ways. Now I'm in my early 40s, we'll just... But so like when I was in high school, we didn't even have computers in my school. I learned how to type on a typewriter. And then, for example, so I get set in my ways. And for us, it was like private bulletin boards with modems in a closet someplace, or private chat boards, or CompuServe and Prodigy. Like, that was like where some of my generation kind of grew up on the internet or the web. Your generation, different. I look back, my son is 5 years old. You know what? He knows what a keyboard is, but that's not his primary way of inputting information in a device. It's his finger.
Yep.
He touches everything. Even if he's typing on a QWERTY keyboard on an iPad, we learned how to interact with mice and keyboards because that's the only way you can get it in. My five-year-old knows voice dictation, how to get Siri to do stupid things on the iPad, and he knows how to touch things to make them do what he wants. That's the next generation coming up. That's what the internet is going to have to accommodate. He's not going to want to type.
Absolutely.
He's going to want to talk to the computer, go Star Trek, and have it return what he wants. So in that aspect, when I looked at that and I looked at Facebook, the graph search, I was like, this makes more sense because this would be how most, you know, tell me, I got to find friends near me that like this pizzeria or whatever. Like, that's more of a natural type of thing to search for than what we've trained ourselves to search for in Google, because now almost anyone knows what a keyword is, even if they don't know what the word is. They don't speak naturally to search engines. They speak in keywords to find what they want. And
absolutely.
I think the next generations up are going to be more fluid in their communications, and the systems have to catch up with that. So that, I think, is a huge perk in how the graph search is going to hopefully work in Facebook, because the next generations coming up that, you know, aren't even out of high school yet, that this is how they're going to learn how to use it. So Facebook's kind of preempting it, in my opinion.
My three-year-old goddaughter is the same way as your five-year-old son. It's like if she's taking a photo, if she's had a photo taken of her, immediately wants to see it, and then wants to flip through them all, and she will say in real time, "I don't like that one. Get rid of it." And I learned a lot of the social stuff through my phone. Like, that's mobile for me. So that's why whenever businesses say, "Well, I don't really understand why I should get a mobile," it's because, well, my generation is the next one to have X amount of dollars. We're the next generation of consumers.
Yeah.
Are you interested in attracting our business? And I would imagine they're going to say yes. So.
Yeah, and I mean, even that, I mean, my thing with mobile is, and especially socially enabled mobile commerce, we'll just throw all the buzzwords in there today, is, you know what? I have left the house with my phone and I've forgotten my wallet. Like, that's huge. Like, who forgets their wallet or their purse as a woman? You know, like, you just don't do it, but you never see anyone, especially if they're in the smartphone era. You never see them leave the house. You never see them walk to the other side of the house without their phone. That's how intimate these businesses can get. And the holy grail has always been like email marketing, right? Because email boxes are very like, I don't want my assistant in my email box because there's all kinds of stuff in there, whatever. Like, that's kind of a very close to someone, that's about as close as you can get to them personally to sell to them. So if they opt in on an email list, like, that's huge. Like, that's like right in the front door. But mobile is so much closer than even your email, because despite what the rest of my family thinks, I really don't want them going through all of my stuff on my phone. Like, this is mine. It's configured how exactly I want it to my preferences. And when you can get your business or your social in front of someone on their mobile device like this, that's like, you might as well, you're right in their wallet, honestly. So I think that that's really where it needs to go. And your generation, especially, you guys know how to pay with devices. You know, Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts all have apps. You just swipe your phone in front of it and you've paid for your coffee. You don't even need wallets anymore, where my age group is still holding on to cash and debit cards a little bit. So it's all what, you know, and it's not going to take long to flip. It's going to be 5 years and you guys are in control and that's it. Game over for the rest of them.
I hate when I leave my purse at the house. It's horrible.
Don't you?
It's terrible.
So,
two more questions and I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much for your time again. The fight for privacy and the constant struggle between Facebook and Google for profile info is a big one. And I think that for the most part, most people are more comfortable with Google having their information than maybe Facebook having it. Is Google living up to their do no evil policy with this type of profile info, or are they simply the lesser of two evils in this case?
I think they're holding up to it. I still get in my real life, my non-magical internet webs life, still talk to people that are like petrified that Facebook specifically is going to have their personal information, their social security number, and their home address and phone number. And I go, well, don't put it in the system. And they said, well, I didn't enter it in. Well, where are they going to pull it from? Like, it doesn't just come out of nowhere. You have to put that information in. So to me, the whole idea and the myth of privacy is complete bunk, because if there's something that you don't want out there, you don't tell it. These systems aren't that smart. They really aren't. But I think that Facebook, it appears to be a bigger invasion of privacy because they are, in my opinion, a little bit better at targeting advertising to you. And it's a little bit more intimate, because when I search on a Google page, right, like the Google ads that show up on the right-hand side are like way over to the side, and we already have right column blindness. We don't even look at that stuff anymore, to be honest. But in Facebook, the ads are integrated. They're on the side. They're showing up. Oh, six of your friends like this, so you see their picture, so your eye is drawn over there. And then you're like, wait a minute, why are they marketing whatever to me? And it seems like an invasion of privacy, because it seems like Big Brother, when you, in fact, have told the system what it is. A couple of years ago, I met an eye doctor who does like LASIK and all that kind of thing. And he's part of a group that medical group or something, maybe in the building, that does like cosmetic surgery and enhancements and stuff for women. And he had told me, we were out at a networking group and I met him, and he goes, cause I'm like a doctor, he's not going to be on Facebook. He goes, I love Facebook. And I said, really, tell me why. He goes, let me tell you something. I go into Facebook and I tell it, if you're 40 years old or older and your status has recently flipped to divorced and you live in the entire like New York State metro area, he goes, you are going to get nothing but facelift advertising from me. And he has like a 40% click-through rate, which is astronomically crazy on Facebook. But he knows, 40 years old and you're suddenly divorced, all of a sudden, I need some work kind of thing. So, and he goes, that's all I ever buy. 40 years old and up, recently changed yourself to divorced, you're getting ads from me. And it seems invasive. Like, how does that woman know, like, all of a sudden, you know, it's putting in on her insecurities, for better or for worse. But people do that. You talk about a sports team, you're going to see sports gear on the side. And because they don't understand how the technology works, it seems scary to them. Google does the same thing, but based on what you're typing in, not on your profile so much. So if I'm looking for, you know, Philadelphia Eagles jersey, and it gives me ads based on that, I'm like, wow, it knows what I'm looking for. But the other way around is a little scary, because it's diving into personal type information. So it's, I just want to say people are getting more used to it now, for better or for worse. But I think, I actually don't think Facebook is that bad with their advertising. A lot of people are kind of scary about it. What happened in the past was a lot of the applications were taking advantage of the data that they had, or the API and the integration wasn't that tight in Facebook. A lot of people were finding loopholes of stuff they could get away with when Facebook really didn't want them to do it. But I definitely have seen that tighten down as well too. So I don't see as many scare tactics or crazy people running around thinking that, you know, Facebook knows everything about them. So
I think the privacy is a big thing, obviously, and it will continue to be a huge debate for the next however many years.
Yeah. Maybe your generation, like I'm some old fart. Maybe it ends with you guys though, honestly.
It seems to be that way. A lot of my friends don't seem to really care. Like even the ones that are either like so fully entrenched in it and they're in the industry, or that are just like, they have mobile devices or they're techies or whatever. It doesn't seem to really bother them. You know, I have a couple friends that seem like, I don't want to deal with Google because they use, you know, different things with the ad tools. And mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, but you were searching for that. You obviously were interested in that. Yeah. So it's a double-edged sword. And I think people are kind of getting used to the sharp side they don't want to deal with. But yeah. Lynette, Jeff made a request that if you could use your pull at Google to try and get them to unify their messaging with Google Voice, Talk, Plus, Messenger, Hangouts, video chat, and if they can't just unify them, put them all into one.
I would kiss somebody at Google for that. I'm telling you, it is ridiculous. I have a Google Voice. I can't get them on my phone to have the chat with the other. It's ridiculous. I agree. I guess part of it is that I kind of looked at Google as being a where Apple, for example, like everything that left Apple had to be pristine and just nearly perfect before it walks out their door, right? Where Google's more like, hey, let's try this and let's put it in beta like Gmail was in beta for like 5 years or something,
just,
and see just it
throw it against the wall
just
and see
it
what
there
happens.
And fix it on the fly. Like, I know that, I don't know if they still do, but Google Plus in the beginning, they were putting one or two production updates a day in. Like, twice a day they were updating code on the platform. That's unheard of, especially on something this big. So they're constantly tweaking it, which some people would like, you know, the minimum viable product to market kind of thing. And then there's, you know, perfection to market, which is kind of Google or Apple. But yeah, I think because they had all these separate products, like YouTube was an acquisition, but you know, you've got this, you've got search, you've got the Picasa, the pictures, which that was an acquisition too. So they've got all these different pieces that they haven't figured out how to make work together yet. But I'm kind of hoping that Google Plus as an initiative internally, having really no knowledge inside of the company, is going to help them unify this a little bit better. Because if they can make this Google Plus truly a social layer, like they've been touting, where everything is interactive, like I want everywhere that I go on Google to have the one bar on the top. I want all my messaging to show up there. I want my Gmail to show up there. I want my Google Voice to show up there. I want Google Plus notification. Like, I want it all there. Just give me a dashboard.
And remember,
so
I had
totally
the question.
Know what Jeff's talking about.
And I had the question to you that I asked on Google Plus: could you merge email accounts?
No.
I wish you could do that. That would be.
I know.
That would be splendid.
I do have people that I know that use Google accounts, or Google apps rather. So they'll be in a university setting, for example, and use Google apps at their, you know, whatever .edu is their, and they get it for free because that's what Google does. And they have their own private instance of Google Plus, including Hangouts. So when they do things public, it's just public within the university infrastructure kind of thing. But then they're on the outside and they have their real account with, and they can't make them merge. Or they have two Gmail accounts and they can't merge them. And it's not been done, I don't even think, on a one-by-one basis. Like, you know, I'm going to go in there and do it manually for you. I just don't think that they have the ability. There's too much data and it's too much of a mess. So when I talk to people and you join in Google Plus, I'm like, just pick the account you're going to stick with. So it's not perfect. They're doing
it's
it
not
on the fly,
perfect.
I guess.
It is not perfect, but we have certainly learned a ton about Google Plus and Lynette Young. Lynette, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
On Social Echoes. Where can people go and get the book?
You can go to my own professional website at lynetteyoung.com/books, and all the books and all the places that you could purchase them, including not quite a book deal yet, but I'm in the process of writing up a draft for a second book. Totally not on Google Plus though, so it's a good landing page. LynetteYoung.com/books, and Amazon, all those other places, I'll get it too.
Well, excellent. Best of luck with the second book. I hope everything goes well with that. How about where can people go to be social with you?
Actually, my blog is probably a really good place, lynetteradio.com, because I've got all the info on there. I started out years ago as a podcaster, and nobody understood what podcasting was. So I'd be like, it's like radio on the internet. So the radio part kind of stuck with my last name at the point. So I still actively blog there. That's a really good place to get a glimpse of the real Lynette.
Well, very cool. Thank you very much again. That'll do it for Social Echoes. If you like the show, please subscribe via iTunes and leave a review so that others may discover the stuff we love producing for our listeners. Next episode will feature Ed Siders of Branded Productions. Ed was supposed to be the episode 6 last week. Unfortunately, things happened. So Lynette is episode 6. Ed will be episode 7. Anyway, Ed will join us to talk video and its impact on social, search, and story. Hope you'll join us. We'll see you next time. Take care.